Welcome to The Grange Point, where we hang out and talk about the latest news in science technology and how they relate to your everyday life. This podcast is brought to you by the Young Scientists of Australia. We're a youth organisation aged 15 to 25 whose work is to promote science to the youth of Australia.
Tracking and understanding a breeze and weather is difficult enough here on Earth, but what about in space? Now, interstellar wind and winds between galaxies and movements of gases are all part of what create galaxies, the stars and the planets we know. But their motions and their compositions is difficult to image, to capture and to understand. This week we find out about a couple of stories of innovative ways to understand gas as it makes up interstellar space. I'm sure you've noticed that the amount of stars you can see at night will depend a lot on where you are. How much ambient light or light pollution surrounds the environment you're in. The less light from street lights or houses, well, the more stars you can see. Go out into the middle of the Australian outback and you can see some beautiful sights. Now, this is all well and good, but what if you're an astronomer and you want to study the stars? Well, you don't often have a choice to move your observatory that easily. And to be fair, astronomers like to build observatories in pretty weird and out-of-the-way places, on the top of mountain ranges where there's less cloud cover or less dust in the air. And this is often done in many places like the Atacama Desert, for example, which is a big area, also Manukau in Hawaii. These are examples of where telescopes are positioned on places where, well, you can get really good visibility, less particulate matter and less light pollution. This is nice and makes for an exciting holiday for the astronomers, but does it make it really accessible? And there's plenty of things that you want to try and filter out with light pollution anyway, because when we look at the night sky, it's not just the pollution from the light here on Earth that we have to worry about, it's the pollution from the stars themselves. By that I mean, when we want to look at the things that are in space, but not those really, really bright stars that are scattering so much light around it, it makes it difficult to, for want of a better word, see the forest for the trees. And that's where interesting experiments like University of Toronto's Dragonfly telescope come in. Now, Dragonfly is a telescope first made and started to be built in 2014. And the principle behind Dragonfly is really fascinating. Basically, instead of building a giant telescope or sending a telescope all the way up into space, like the Webb telescope, and getting it clear of all potential sources of interference, they said, no, let's forget that. Let's just take a whole bunch of commercially off-the-shelf Canon cameras, strap them together in a special frame, and put a filter-type lens on them. And the reason why they did this is they made a compound telephoto array. So using these telephoto lenses, these really nice, high-accuracy visual cameras, and pairing them together in such a way that you can basically filter out a lot of noise and extraneous light by building a massive array. Now, in radio telescopes, we kind of do a similar thing with things like the Square Kilometre Array, but this is a visual method, and it's really fascinating because it takes inspiration from the Dragonfly's compound eye. Now, way back in 2016, it has 48 lenses was the major upgrade they did then in two distinct clusters, and that gave it some pretty amazing abilities. Because Dragonfly is not just designed to take really nice pictures, it's designed to actually see the faint structures by reducing the amount of scattered light and internal reflections by having so many of these cameras in a large array. It has some special coatings, some nanofabricated coatings with some sub-wavelength structure that's put onto the optical glasses. But when it means when Dragonfly takes a lot of images simultaneously, you can see extremely, extremely faint light, enabling it to remove a whole bunch of unwanted light. Now, this extremely faint light is useful, incredibly useful for seeing structural images, or things that make up galaxies, rather than just getting washed out in the large point-point stars that make up a galaxy. So this is a really useful way of seeing all that wispy bits, those faint bits that make up galaxies. And has been a fascinating area of research for around the last 6 years. Now, two recent examples of this telescope's amazing abilities have been published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters with lead author Imada Pasha, along with a large list of collaborators from Yale University, University of Toronto, and the research areas around New Mexico, where the telescope is based, along with a recent paper by King Lee and Roberto Abraham, which was also with a large list of collaborators, including researchers from the Max Planck Institute. Now, the researchers, with a lot of this is being led by, obviously, the inventors and designers of the telescope's original Li, which is Yale University's Pieter van Dorkum, and Toronto University's Roberto Abreu. Now, the telescope itself, in a couple of these papers, has been really turning its eye not to just the structural elements, but the, well, let's call it extragalactic gas. Now, why this is really interesting is that space isn't just empty. It's a lot of the time we think of it as such, but it is very vast and it's not really densely populated, but there is stuff there. It's just hard necessarily to pick it up with, say, radio telescopes or maybe visual telescopes because of, well, all that extra noise and light that we just spoke about. So Dragonfly is able to actually see some of these things like extragalactic gas. By that I mean interstellar gas that is just floating in this interstellar space between galaxies, between stars. And it's able to do this with special lenses that are mounted on the front of each of those cameras, which block most of the emitted light, leaving just behind the faint glow of light emitted by ionized gas. Now, they tried this out with a sort of a simple version with just three lenses instead of the full 48 array as a proof of concept, and the results were pretty amazing. And that means that they can really scale this up in coming years to get some beautiful imagery of the structural elements of galaxies being formed. Now, in these two studies that we're about to talk about, they were looking at the hidden features within the gas surrounding a group of galaxies. This area is around 12 million light years from Earth, so relatively far away. But they chose this area because lots of other telescopes have been studying this region. And that's good because it actually gives celestial signposts where you can use it to calibrate and gauge the accuracy of this camera. And this area is around Messier 81. Now, the Messier 81 galaxy group is one of the nearest galaxy groups to our own, which makes it pretty easy to study. And because it's been easy to study, lots of people have looked at it. So it's the best spot to train yourself, like a training ground or a newbie's beginning area in a game. Everything's pretty standard. You know what to expect there. And when you're trying to try out an instrument that's designed to see things that other people might have overlooked, this is exactly where you want to put it. Now, the benefit of this change technique is that hopefully they're going to pick up things that other studies in this region have overlooked. Now, astronomers know that gas is the fuel that it creates not only just stars and planets, but also overall galaxies. But how the gas actually gets into and out of galaxies, that's confusing. Because we can't see it, we can't measure it. It's easy to think about the way gas flows in an atmosphere. We understand that, we can model that, we can study that. But when it comes to the complex mechanics of interstellar space and the different interactions of gravity and also the absence of gravity or atmosphere, it makes it very tricky to understand the flow of gas. So that's what researchers are really trying to piece together, get some data on the way this gas behaves. So in the first paper with lead author Imad Pasha, published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters 2021, they turned this telescopic array, or at least the proof of concept version of it, towards a dwarf galaxy forming inside the tidal arm of galaxy Messier 82. Essentially, Messier 82 flew past Messier 81, and in this process, some stuff was ripped off, some gas was ripped away, and it's beginning to coalesce and form a new galaxy. This is incredibly amazing and interesting stuff to think about, but it's also really hard to image or understand with traditional observatories. There's plenty of these probably other baby galaxies out there, but it's just so hard to see them, literally see them, that it makes it very difficult to study. And this one was able to actually be detected and studied in detail. And now in the second, more recent study with lead author King Li, what they found in this one was a really massive giant cloud of ionized gas. This one is around 180,000 light years long and 30,000 light years wide. That is immense. Now, what this cloud of ionized gas came from is really unclear. It could have been pulled away from Messier 82 during a close encounter with Messier 81. Maybe it was blown away, blown off the top of Messier 82 by some kind of super winds from a large stellar event like a supernova, or just some large prevailing winds from intergalactic stellar wind flow. But it's really unclear because a cloud this wide has never been seen before. You need to detect something like this, not only a super accurate camera, one that can filter out a lot of noise and light, but as first author Deborah Lockhurst pointed out, Our image is the first with sensitivity required and the wide enough field of view to detect. We almost didn't believe it was real. And that's the benefit of some of these telescopes, is that they're expanding our understanding of what is and isn't possible to image. Now, of course, the proof of concept study is out of the way. A much larger one is being assembled. This one will have 120 lenses with this right filter coating on them, arrayed and assembled together in New Mexico over the coming years. And now with the proof of concept that this can actually find some pretty incredible and new insights into the way galaxies are formed and the structural gases that make them up, this paves ground for trying to, in a deeper way, understand the formation of galaxies themselves. We think we have a good handle on how planets are formed and stars, but the overall bigger picture of the intergalactic structure, well, that's what we hope to shed light on with telescope arrays like this. And it's an amazing work done out of Yale University and Toronto University of Toronto to use just simple commercial off-the-shelf equipment and take a design from nature and adapt it to make it into a really powerful tool that can help shed light on things very far away by just caring about the faintest sources of light. These two papers were published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters, first paper with lead author Imad Pasha and second paper by lead author Qing Liu et al. One of the ways that we understand the flow of gas across space is by finding events where a large eruption of gas occurs. And this is a pretty difficult thing to do because you've got to find some kind of violent eruption or the destruction of a star or some other kind of stellar event. And whenever that happens, then you've got to get enough instruments pointed at it at the exact moment to try and capture all of that flow. And most of the time, you might see what scientists call low-mass X-ray binaries, LMXBs, which are systems containing neutron stars or a black hole. Now, how these things work is they're fueled by material ripped from a neighboring star. Basically, they pull off and skim off the top, and you may have seen images depicting exactly this, in a process that's known as accretion. Now, most of the time, accretion occurs during big violent eruptions, where the systems brighten dramatically, and that's useful because scientists can see it and observe it, even if it's only for a small window of time. Now, that's great, but then you've got to make sure you catch it exactly, and with more than one instrument, and with more than one instrument type. At the same time, some of the material that spirals inwards is actually then misses the object, the black hole or the neutron star. It is ejected out into space in the form of disks and winds and jets. So in the previous story, we talked about how sometimes you might have something that's accreted through ejection from another galaxy object or blown off the top. This is a kind of mechanism that could do that. Most of the time when researchers have been able to catch these eruptions of gas, they've either got it when it's really hot or when it's really cold by detecting transient X-ray binaries. At least until this most recent paper published in the journal Nature with a very large list of collaborators, because a lot of instruments were used. Researchers from 11 countries led by the University of Southampton, including NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, the European Space Agency's XMN Newton satellite, the Very Large Telescope from the European Space Agency, and even Spain's Gran Telescopio Canarias. So that's a lot of different telescopes. And lead author on this paper was Dr. Noel Castro Segura, University of Southampton, and a long list of collaborators. This was published in the journal Nature very recently. And what this list of collaborators was doing was, well, they actually detected a pretty unusual stellar event. And then they basically got on the phone and said, hey, you've got an instrument, we need to get some eyes on this so we can get as much data as possible. Now, the reason why is eruptions like this are pretty rare, and each of them have their own flavor. In this case, what they were looking at was an eruption that had some pretty persistent signatures of a warm wind at ultraviolet wavelengths occurring almost at the same time as a cold wind actually in the optical wavelength. And it's the first time they've actually seen such a broad coverage of the electromagnetic spectrum. The problem is normally that, like with most things, we're trying to talk about the flow of gas. So there's a lot of things that get in the way. Of course, I'm talking about the pollution inside space, yet trying to see that amongst all the other stars that are around it. So it's actually pretty difficult to image. And in this case, they were looking at a recent eruption of an X-ray binary system known as SWIFT-J1858. Now, we've seen other systems kind of like this, like the Cole X-ray binary V404 SIG, which has similar properties, but they actually weren't able to get good images of it because as soon as they found it, it actually, the eruption had stopped and before they had a chance to collect more data. In this case, they were rapidly on the phone and got everyone to train their eyes on Swift J1858 and actually get some images across all types of the electromagnetic spectrum for one of the first times ever for one of these events. And what they could see by doing so is actually see the process of a neutron star gobbling up gas from neighboring stars. And they could see not only the process of the neutron star consuming and accreting all the gas, but also the mess that it makes while it eats, because as co-author Natalia Denaga points out, they're messy eaters. And their behavior has a large impact on both the neutron star itself and its immediate surrounding. So not only were they able to detect the different types of wind in the different spectrums, including warm, cold, as well as hot, they were also able to see the way that the temporally changes over time, the way the gas flows in and out. And what they saw is that the warm wind was not affected by strong variations in the brightness of the system. It sort of much continued unabated. And this aligns with a lot of theoretical predictions and models, but it's the first time researchers have actually got data on the way in which these gas flows behave in real life. So, but the process by which, you know, mass and gas is accreted by these large events like black holes or neutron stars is understood in principle, but the details of actually how they flow, well, we can model and simulate here on Earth, but this is one of the first times we've actually got a really good picture of how it happens inside the interstellar space. And it requires a lot of collaboration and a lot of telescopes and a little bit of luck to actually get there with enough time to capture these rare events in enough detail. And that's exactly what these researchers have done and published in the journal Nature. It shows that the flow of gas in and out of star systems and in and out of galaxies for that matter is very intricate and messy, but fascinating at the same time.
This has been the Young Scientists of Australia's podcast, Lagrange Point.
Capturing the faintest of lights with an array of cameras to understanding violent eruptions and explosions and how they can help us understand interstellar gas.
Our ending theme was composed by Audionautix. Head to ysa.org.au for more information about the Young Scientists of Australia.